Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. On a February night in 1958, Milwaukee police tried to pull over an African-American motorist on the city's north side. Police at the scene said after trying to evade them, the driver jumped out of the car and lunged at officers with a knife. They shot and killed Daniel Bell at the scene. Family members, though, believed a cover-up shielded what really happened that night, and a startling admission by a police officer two decades later confirmed their fears, and it resulted in a significant financial settlement with Bell's survivors. But for Bell's sister, Sylvia Bell White, her brother's injustice at the hands of police was just one part of a lifetime in which inequality swirled around her. But her life has also been marked by resilience. Sylvia Bell White's story is told in a new book by Madison writer and historian Jody LePage, who used hours of oral history interviews. Each chapter is divided between LePage's historical analysis and Sylvia's stories told in her own words. LePage, who will share the story in Milwaukee on Saturday, joins us on the line from Madison this morning. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Why do you think it is important for people to know Sylvia Bell White's story?
Well, I think it has several levels of importance. For Milwaukee, of course, the Daniel Bell case is very important for the city of Milwaukee. Every time a new questionable incident occurs, people talk again about the Daniel Bell case because it's just one of those unusual instances when what really happened came out, which rarely does happen in these instances. So there's always all this doubt about them. But I also think that the book is very important because Sylvia wanted to tell her whole life story, which has a very wide scope. It spans from grandparents born in slavery to the first African-American president of the United States. And it begins in the segregated South with several chapters about what it was like to live there as a child through the Depression and World War II, and comes up through the present.
How did you start learning it? You, if I have the chronology right, have known Sylvia for 40 years.
That's right. I met Sylvia when we both were selling vegetables at the farmer's market in 1973. At the time, I thought she was just a few years older than me. We were just casual friends. I thought she was one of the most fun people I had ever met. And so any chance I got, I would get over to her stand and talk with her. And then I soon was back in school and no longer selling vegetables at the farmer's market, but she was, and so I'd come and visit her and stayed in touch with her over the years, partly through correspondence. Later, she was selling only in Milwaukee, and I encountered her there when I was going to UWM myself. And so we just stayed in touch over the years, and it was really after the Milwaukee Repertory Theater did a play about the Daniel Bell case that Sylvia asked me if I would help her write her life story. It took quite a while after that because I had just I was just enrolled in the PhD program here in Madison in French history. I was in a different field altogether. But when I finished, we just ended up doing this book.
Well, and the conversations that that drive the story, I gather, played out over several years. When did it all start to coalesce into the book it became?
It's an oral history project, so we knew from the start that we were going to have Sylvia telling her own story. We made most of the tapes in 1998. We made a few others later when she would tell me some story that was longer and really needed to be captured on tape. But she also told me some things when we would meet. She would drive over here to meet me at Memorial Library at the University of Wisconsin here in Madison. And we would meet once a week and discuss my research as I was beginning to read in order to frame her chapters in their historical context, to put some history with her chapters so that people would have a better understanding of what she was talking about. Some of her narrative emerged in those meetings also. I would just take notes if she would say something that was particularly interesting. Her narrative, most of it is on tape, not every little scrap of it, though.
Sure.
I had just completed a PhD in history, so I was interested in framing the story in its historical context. So it has quite a historical sweep.
And of course, the underlying theme that runs through much of this book is the injustice towards African Americans that surrounded Sylvia and the people around her at many points in her life. So what can you tell us about her childhood in the South and what she was dealing with there?
Well, she grew up where segregation was both by law and by custom. It was a part of their lives, whether it was walking into town and going into the store and or not being allowed to go into any restaurants, or probably the most important dimension of it in Sylvia's life as a child was that where she grew up, there was no school for black children, only a school for white children. And so the children in her community only had a school because their parents created one. They pooled what little money they could. They got a room in the church and hired a teacher, just one teacher for the entire community, which meant as many as 100 children, actually of all ages and all levels. And then only when the parents could spare the children's work in the field. So that was the most important thing to those children, was that they really received no education. That Sylvia did manage to learn to read and write, as did a couple others of her brothers. But this was an issue for Daniel Bell, who did not have a Wisconsin driver's license because he couldn't pass the written part of the Wisconsin driver's test. And his family feels quite certain that that's why Dan ran away when he was pulled over by the police in Milwaukee.
So let's flash forward, because she moved and some of her relatives moved from the Jim Crow South to what you write, some described as the James Crow North, and settled in Milwaukee. What were people getting at when they described the situation in Milwaukee and other places in the North as James Crow?
Well, I think what they were just saying was that it was slightly more polite form, or a less overt form of racial discrimination that they were encountering. I think that Sylvia was young when she came to Milwaukee and therefore had very high hopes. I think people came from the segregated South expecting the North to be a place where the kinds of situations they encountered in the South would not confront them. And instead they found that they encountered job discrimination, housing discrimination, and personal forms of discrimination. And of course, in the instance of Daniel Bell, it's an example of discrimination in policing. So they felt that they encountered some of the same basic problems. It was just less overt. There weren't laws saying that African Americans couldn't enter spaces such as restaurants and so forth, or that kind of open. There was certainly far less lynching in the North, although it did occur here also.
Well, and you mentioned employment discrimination. We actually have a clip of tape of Sylvia Bell White talking about what she saw pretty much every day as she lived in Milwaukee. But before we hear, what can you tell us about what her aspirations were and what she really encountered?
Well, as was the case with many African Americans, she thought when she came to Milwaukee, since it had a booming manufacturing sector at that time, that she would be able to get a good job in a Milwaukee factory. Although what she really hoped to do more than anything else was to have a nursing career. So she hoped to get an education and be able to have that nursing career also over time. But what she hoped when she first arrived was that she'd be able to get a good job in a Milwaukee factory. And manufacturing was really booming in the city at that time.
We'll hear this clip of tape where she talks about living essentially right near a very large bakery and essentially learning that there's no way in the world that she's going to get a job there.
Yes.
I could see all the people, all these. I don't want to really emphasize a white, but all these white people would be walking down the streets on Monday morning. It would be just droves of them. And I said, where are they going, Auntie? She said, they are going to Yerga's Bakery, right up under us. I mean, it was a nice little black community in there. I would say, oh my God, look at all those people. And she would tell me, well, they're going to work. To work? Maybe I can get me a job over there. She said, not hardly.
The killing of her brother by a Milwaukee policeman in 1958 was obviously one of the most significant moments in her life and the life of her family. what I thought was interesting was it represents a fairly small portion of the book itself.
Yes, she didn't want the book to be exclusively focused on the Daniel Bell case. She really wanted it to be about her whole life, and that life covers a lot of other ground. And certainly the Daniel Bell incident, it is part of the whole story. It never really leaves her mind, of course. And so it's true that it's concentrated in a couple of chapters, and then there are threads through the book that connect with the Daniel Bell case. But Sylvia really wanted this to be a larger story. It's about larger issues of race in America and also about a woman's life, the life of a rather adventurous person who braved the things that others might not try and who pushed the limits, particularly limits imposed by racism. So she wanted to really tell her whole life story.
Well, and as we, you know, as we tend to do in this country, we might think that after the civil rights movement, everything got better. She left for California and came back to Wisconsin. What has driven the last few decades of her life in Wisconsin, and what were the kinds of justice issues she experienced in, you know, the time since really the time since you've known her?
This is the main point, really, that Sylvia wanted to make with this book, is that for as long as her life is, and as much time as it covers, and as much change as she's seen in her life, racial injustice really remains a major problem in American society. She certainly speaks in her last chapter about the voting issues that arose in the 2000 presidential election, where a lot of African Americans were deprived of their vote. And I think she became increasingly interested in telling a story that reached beyond herself and her own family and her brothers to that larger picture of what life has been like for African Americans in this country, in a country where Sylvia very much feels identified as an American and very much took this country at its word when she was a teenager in World War II and heard a lot of talk about the American way as opposed to the kind of racism that Hitler and the Nazis were known for.
One of the things I thought was particularly interesting was the idea that you chose to transcribe her stories in a way that really captures her style of speaking, her dialect. Was that at all an issue for you?
It wasn't really an issue for me. I knew from the start that I wanted to have her speech be as authentic as possible. It got a little bit tricky because she would have liked it to be corrected more. She is very aware of her lack of education as a child, and we had that discussion at one point after she had seen the manuscript of her own narrative and wanted me to correct the English more, and I balked, and we had to have this discussion about it. But I knew from the start that I really wanted to have it be Sylvia speaking in her own words, and I think that is part of the power of the book, really.
What also struck me was, given all of the stuff life has thrown at Sylvia, she doesn't come off seeming, I hate to use this word, but she doesn't seem bitter.
She's not. It's one of the most impressive things about Sylvia is that she's just remains this very loving, good person, very outgoing, very ready to meet and enjoy people, to really love them. I really traced some of that back to the father who raised those children, who I think really taught them that you demonstrate your dignity. This was in the segregated South, a very degrading and oppressive situation, but that you demonstrate your dignity by following your own understanding of right and wrong and what you feel is the way you should behave, rather than letting anyone else's ugly behavior determine your behavior.
Well, it is a remarkable story, and she seems like a remarkable person. And Jody LePage, thank you so much for sharing the story with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Jody LePage is the co-author, along with Sylvia Bell White, of the book Sister, An African-American Life in Search of Justice, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. She'll talk about the book tomorrow afternoon at the Wisconsin African-American Women's Center in Milwaukee. Another quick break now, and in just a moment, we'll learn about a feature film about to begin production on Lake Michigan. Really, it will be produced on Lake Michigan. This is Lake Effect from WUWF.